Hello, this is Adriana Masters from the New Practitioner Committee. I'm starting the second episode in our series of highlighting New Practitioner Committee members in ACRO at various practice patterns and why each of us has chosen radiation oncology. Today, joining us is Jessica Schuster, who is at the University of Wisconsin and has been a wonderful mentor to myself. A former chair of the New Practitioner Committee, very active in the Scientific Planning Committee, and an all-around just excellent human being. So, Jessica, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for that very kind introduction. Excited to support the new practitioners and, as you mentioned, have gained a lot of experience and friendships and mentorship by participating in ACRO.
Yeah, fantastic. And could you give us a little bit of an introduction into, how you became involved in ACRO?
Yes. The very honest truth is that after graduating residency from Virginia Commonwealth, my first year as an attending, I had a second child and missed Astro because of being kind of a new parent. And at the time, my son was having a heart surgery and was looking to utilize my education funds and thought, where else can I go? And I was like, oh, this timing will work out great. I'm going to go try out ACRO. And that was in 2016. And I have been to every ACRO meeting since then.
Oh, wow. That's great. That's great. It's kind of nice that it is at a different portion of the year, in the calendar year. The annual meeting is usually in March, so it's nice to be able to have more than one, great meeting to attend. You're talking a little bit about transitions too, and that's, I think, one of the great benefits of the ACRO New Practitioner Committee is kind of fostering that transition into practice. I think there is this idea that everybody's going to go into the same model that they train in, and that there is only one potential option, or sometimes two options, in terms of, how your job works and what that structure is. Can you tell us a little bit about what the various jobs you have are, and how you kind of organize that all into one pattern?
Yes, I think most of us find as we're leaving residency that we are expecting to be radiation oncologist. And then you kind of enter into practice and realize that there are really many, many different models to the way that looked. I remember my co-resident and I both were interested in what we kind of deemed academic light, which was, kind of really high quality clinical care and clinical colleagues, but maybe not your kind of 10-year R01 grant
Yeah.
pathway. And so that brought me to, a variety of interviews. And ultimately, the University of Wisconsin had a satellite position, and that was very clinically heavy and very forward-thinking. And I really have encouraged many people and residents coming out as, satellite jobs are not uncommon jobs to be available. That I had 4 days a week at that satellite, which was about an hour from UW. And I lived in between the two locations. And our chairman and very intentionally said, you need one day a week at the main campus. And that really left the door open to stay connected to the main campus. And initially, I used that day to attend a tumor board, and to do some special procedures that my satellite clinic wasn't doing, but I felt comfortable doing SRS. UW has a ViewRay, so kind of getting educated and learning how to use that technology. And so that really kind of opened the door. And I'd say still kind of the first 2 years of my practice really were just that. I found myself gravitating to a couple of additional pieces, which was being the local site PI for research. And so that allowed me to plug in, you know, kind of just be familiar with all the names of our research staff. I was more of an enroller than a designer of clinical studies. And then...
Can I ask a question about that? Yeah. So was that at your satellite site that you were able to do that, that you were the local accruer to studies there?
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah.
And in fact, for one of those pieces, we had the RTOG 0815 open, and the UW satellite docs were, you know, kind of in the top accruers on that study. So, you know, just kind of feeling passionate about educating patients about clinical studies. And the accrual, I don't know that you see this as a resident, but that accrual is such an important part of the cancer center, you know, meeting their national goals. And so that was seen as kind of in a clinical person, it kind of counted towards some of my promotion goals and these kind of things for a research interest where I had no idea, you know, I was like, oh, that's just what we're supposed to do. But it had kind of a dual purpose. And I think that's important too, particularly in a satellite or an academic place, you know, part of the process is what is it? How are you crafting your good clinical work and whatever your plus is? Because almost all of us end up with like clinical plus. And I think of the big
with the additional, you know, like what kind of things are you going to do in addition to just seeing patients? Yeah. Like how do you add value to, you know, your organization or wherever you work or your colleagues? And, you know, how can you make that a dual purpose? I think that's a huge tip from you.
Mm-hmm. And the, you know, kind of from the satellite position, you know, in terms of kind of the academic side, you know, kind of the big buckets are kind of admin, education, or research. And, you know, my perspective had been that like, oh, research is the only way. And it wasn't my initial huge passion, or it always falls to the bottom of the list of the to-do list. And so secondarily, after kind of establishing that clinical practice, I volunteered to give a few resident lectures. And then that led down, I found it was like, wow, this is, you know, this is this I really enjoy. This part of being, you know, in the academic setting, I really enjoy. And we have at UW, we have actually a couple of our affiliate and satellite folks that are adjunct professors. And that allowed...
Sorry. Could you explain like what that means to be an adjunct versus like a satellite faculty? Like what do those words mean? Yeah.
So at UW, and they may have slightly different definitions at other places, but I am technically, you know, faculty on UW. And so that means that I work for the university. You know, similar to like a PhD in engineering, you know, and then adjunct kind of allows you to have the affiliation with UW, different perks, you know, a UW email is occasionally used, access to the online PubMed library.
Oh, that's huge. Yeah.
Yep. And our adjunct faculty at UW, all of our lectures are faculty presenters to the residents for the most part. And probably one of my very favorite lecturers is actually a guy that's in kind of a hybrid practice. He's an adjunct faculty, because that his passion too was he's effectively in a private practice. But it really loves working with residents and educating. And that was his way to kind of connect. And the residents really know him really well. And they feel totally comfortable referring patients to that, satellite location. And that's kind of how I felt too. So that kind of led to, wow, I really like the residents. And we had some faculty transition, and the main campus kind of called and said, hey, will you work at the main campus? And you have to decide whether that's your goal. And I think for a lot of people coming out, they're like, I'm working at the satellite until they pull me out. And so you have to kind of, your job, even though I haven't changed jobs, my job looks very different than those first couple of years out. And so if the main campus calls, you have to be kind of prepared with what you're going to say. Because people move and people retire, and jobs that you've been waiting for might open up, but jobs that you, kind of a very different job from what I was doing, came in and became kind of a fill in. And I knew I wanted that to be a temporary thing for myself. But it did let me work more with the residents, and then ultimately led to being the associate program director. And so kind of found that resident education really was a passion. So that has been really fulfilling as kind of my clinical plus.
Yeah, that's awesome. So did it kind of surprise you, like how your job changed, or like how your thoughts about what you may have wanted as a resident may be different than, in a couple years of practice? Is it the same? Is it different? Or, how are those thoughts changing over time?
Yeah, for me, at the very beginning, when you first get out in practice, it just feels so overwhelming to just do your job.
Yeah.
Like all the clinical pieces, and even though I wasn't as research heavy as some people are, it was just kind of a mastery of lots of different disease sites and double checking my work and these things. And then you realize that there's other kind of opportunities to be doing your job, two different avenues. And so that help either residents or, ultimately help your colleagues. And so because we had some really good success at our satellite, kind of maintaining high level technology and commitment kind of between the staff and the local hospitals that were supporting that satellite, that kind of led down a path of, kind of some higher level administrative meetings as well. And then ultimately kind of my role as the regional director. And that really just ended up being kind of a little bit of a serendipitous kind of role, but allows me to kind of be the point person if somebody has a radiation oncology question from our satellites. Opened the door for our satellites to do some peer review for each other. And also share our questions that we had back to the main campus with the whole group, so that we were kind of bringing up the whole group and providing consistency within those regional groups. So there's, you know, kind of neat ways to connect, again, kind of all along the clinical lines.
Yeah. And so that integrated kind of peer review, was that an option before you were in that role, or is that something that you created or strengthened?
Not really. Yeah. I think that was something that I felt I needed. We kind of created, and we didn't really have it. We did peer review kind of as a group with the main campus. Mm-hmm. But it was more kind of the, like, the pre-step is what we created for our folks, which was like, here's the case, here's what I'm thinking about doing, here's the contours I've put on. So kind mm-hmm. of before their treatment plan is designed, is to kind of have peer review.
I think that's something that's becoming a lot more popular over time too, mm-hmm. is rather than like waiting until the plan is already generated, doing a lot more of the preliminary review, case discussion, how do you approach different situations, and you know, how do you approach like contouring and planning design. And I think that's, it's great to see that implemented in a community setting too, and to see that, you know, a lot of your efforts in providing excellent clinical care were really kind of rewarded and help you to find your way into different leadership positions. Because I think too, there's this thought that, well, the only way to do leadership or to be recognized at a satellite is to get into more administrative roles, but mm-hmm. also by providing excellent clinical care that was recognized and led itself to you being more involved in making new programs. That's really neat.
Very neat. That one really came out of, I always laugh a little bit because most of my projects come out of slightly selfish things. Like I wanted someone to help me review things, you know, like just some extra eyeballs. And then we just kind of made it formal. And then I feel like I need more education, so I help coordinate the resident education schedule, and then I get lectures every couple times a week to myself.
I think you could see that in multiple different ways. Like, you could see it as like, oh, this is selfishly what I need, but also like, I think having the humility to say when you don't have the answer is huge, mm-hmm. and I think that's a very under-recognized quality. So I think you, from an outside perspective, are doing an awesome job of saying like, hey, like, I think that this would be a good idea. This is what I need, but let's make it better for everybody.
Yes.
That's awesome.
And I think, you know, any projects that, you know, kind of benefit that dual, as much as you can, the dual purpose of either helping your patients and helping your staff, or helping, you know, yourself help your patients, and then sharing that, you know. And I think that's the other piece that I found so beneficial through the new practitioner group is it's great to have partners within your practice, but it's also really, really helpful to just hear and gather ideas that are working well at other places.
Definitely.
And so that was one of the things that really like kept me coming back to ACRO and participating in the new practitioner group, because like even during COVID, it had nothing to do with radiation oncology specific, but like, hey, are you guys wearing masks? Are you guys, you know, what are you doing around the country? Was really neat.
Absolutely. And it's great to have that support network too, for like, you know, just random questions or cases or techniques, or, you know, it's great to have like your practice pattern that you learn as a resident. But I think in that transition process, part of your first job and your first years of practice is figuring out what you're going to do, what's going to be the things that you take from residency, the things that you adapt, you know, and how you stay up to date with what's going on outside of wherever it is that you practice. So I really like having all that context and having a really open group that I found to be super supportive and super welcoming. So it's easy, I think too easy to get kind of in your own little bubble as a new practitioner starting out in practice to not really know what are the options or what is everybody else doing? Or, you know, what are some of the ways that you could approach a situation? So I find that really helpful.
Yeah. And you fight a little bit with yourself, particularly if you go to a new place or even if you stay where you trained, of I want to ask enough questions, but I also want to appear as competent as possible.
Yes, yes.
And so that is, you know, you just have to navigate that and embrace it, I think, a little bit and try to figure out where you could get those extra supports. And I will say that I found my group in particular, you know, kind of that balance of you want to, you know, not do anything that's going to harm a patient, but you also want to appear very competent to your colleagues and have them have, you know, abundance of confidence that you're doing a good job. But I think that's kind of where finding your niche of, you know, how do you, what is it that you can help your colleagues do, even if you're not necessarily the content expert?
Yes.
The, you know, what avenues are you, do you enjoy, and what avenues, you know, everybody has their kind of sub skill set.
Yeah. Like, what's your favorite thing? You know, like, do you like doing like clinical workflows? Like, I like having an efficient workflow in clinic. I like knowing, you know, how somebody gets referred to us, what the process is. Like, that just intrigues me for whatever reason. Most people find it so boring, they want to fall asleep. But like that's one thing that I like. So like finding how you can be, you know, helpful and supportive of other people, I think is a great balance too. One of the things that I remember finding very helpful from ACRO from my very first meeting was a talk by Sheila Reagan about practice building and finding, you know, what within your practice is going to make you an integral part of that process. Even if it's something that, you know, may not be the most glamorous, like finding your way to contribute, to be beneficial, not just to you and your patients, but to your practice, to the larger group, was super helpful. And it's easy to forget that when you're a new practitioner and you're treating your first patients and you're trying to figure out, you know, how those referral patterns and practice patterns happen. So I've taken away a lot of just like practice building tips from ACRO over the years that have been really helpful.
No, I'm so glad you brought up Sheila Reagan and Joanne Dragon, because those two ladies in particular through ACRO highlighted for me as a new practitioner that you could be very well respected and hold leadership positions based on kind of your clinical skills and your passion for other radiation oncologists. And not just your R01 grants. Not that those aren't also super awesome, but it was seeing those ladies in leadership positions at ACRO was very kind of empowering.
Absolutely.
Helped me to like lean into the things that I was like, man, you know what? I'm slightly better at this education bit and admin bit than I am at, you know, other things.
Not everybody's going to be a bench researcher, you know, and that's okay. Like, very few of us are going to actually do that.
And that's right.
Like, that does not make you less of a radiation oncologist.
And then one follow-up that I might have is that earlier you were kind of asking me how the job has changed.
Yeah.
And, so I mentioned that I got called to the main campus. And for many people, that is like the goal. But for me, it was not. And so I had to look for an exit strategy. And so I think it's important that you can also, as you kind of build seniority, make sure that you take time if your chair or your, you know, leadership doesn't, they really should meet with you on at least an annual basis and mm-hmm. talk about your goals, and their goals. You know, we have to kind of mutual, the organization needs you to do work. But you can kind of tailor where it is that you fit. And the more senior you get, I think the more that conversation can be open. And so for me, the opportunity arose for a transition to a Veterans Affairs hospital affiliated with medicine. And I was going, would be able to be a general radiation oncologist again, mm-hmm. as opposed to kind of a specialist. And so when that opportunity came up, our, you know, chair kind of mentioned that we were going to potentially hire and requested a meeting and said, what do you think about hiring for my current job and letting me take that job? And so knowing that, you know, you can kind of call and request things anyway, or say, hey, I'd like to be in the queue for this kind of position or this kind of schedule. And I think that transition opportunity kind of came up without me ever leaving my job. Now I'm at the VA for my clinical time 3 days a week and get to continue to see a diversity of patients by seeing breast cancer patients on my UW time. And so that has been allowed me to continue to be a general radiation oncologist, but take the leadership position at the VA hospital.
Yeah, that's awesome. So like, do you think that that transition point happened partially because you had advocated for the kind of practice that you wanted? Or when that came up, did you say, hey, what about me? Or was it that you'd already laid that foundation of, I really like being in a community setting, or I like doing some generalist work? Like, how did that happen?
Yes, I think that I probably laid some groundwork in that I tried and enjoyed being clinically busy. And so kind of volunteered for additional, you know, if there was a time to travel to a additional satellite or go back to the satellite that I had worked at, tried to volunteer whenever possible. And also, as soon as kind of the whisperings were on the ground that we may be opening the VA, I talked about it at our annual review, but also kind of requested an extra meeting.
Awesome. Any tips for like switching different types of practices or things that you learned in that process? Because another common misconception, I might need to rebrand this topic actually to say, you know, common misconceptions in job and practice patterns too. But I think people think that, you know, you can't transition to job types. And I think you're a great example of transitioning within different roles, even within the same university organization. Yeah. What was that transition like to go from community to more specialized and then back more to a community setting?
Yes. So for me, it was personally great because coming out of residency, I didn't really know what it was. And I found that I really liked being in the community. Of course, that's for everybody. Some people get out there and realize, man, I really want to be a specialist. I really want to be the expert in a particular area. And I was, when I kind of went back and did more disease site specific things, it was in an area that I was already seeing quite a bit of. So it was head and neck and breast that I had already seen quite a bit of in the clinical areas, but I did feel like I needed to kind of continue to educate myself more when I was in that role. So that was probably the biggest transition for me. Mm-hmm. But you get some of that extra education by attending the tumor boards. And so for us, kind of making sure that I participated in those tumor boards before my role transitioned. And in fact, now, even though there is great specialty physicians at the UW, mm-hmm. In those disease sites, I actually still find myself going to those tumor boards. And as a generalist, yeah. I mean, you know, Adriana, and many folks are in the same boat. You're like, how many tumor boards can I actually go to? I'm not sure.
Oh my gosh. I think the record for me is 31 a month.
But, yeah. So you just can't go to all of them. But, you know, popping in and out of ones when you have a case and then kind of picking a couple. I still find, even though I'm back to kind of being a generalist, that the VA position, because I do have colleagues there, I'm not the only one. We've kind of partitioned our disease sites out just a little bit more. So I'm like a pseudo generalist now.
You're like a generalist with a focus and a handful
of things. That's right. Yeah.
It seems like that happens pretty often in groups that are not just one person mm-hmm. at a particular site or within a group that has some overlap. Some people naturally gravitate towards specific disease sites or like some, you know, better than others or find their niche in that group in a different way.
And I think it's totally fine to have, whether it's private practice colleagues or, you know, chatting with your chairman. A lot of times, even if you're not the primary person, if you really find that you gravitate towards that disease site after, you know, a year or two of practice, you know, most centers need somebody to back that person up. You know, they go on vacation or they have a 2 weeks where everybody and their brother gets a diagnosis of prostate cancer. And they need that overflow person. So, and as you kind of like, you can kind of be creative in your volunteering for extra things.
I think I'm the general extra volunteer quite frequently because I came from more like general practice, but I actually really enjoy that a lot because it still gives me some variety. You know, it keeps me more up to date. And for like resident education purposes, having a little bit of everything still, I think is helpful for them and like having a contact point. So that's been neat for me too. That has been neat. I guess, could I ask you like one or two more questions and then we'll wrap up. Fantastic. What thing has surprised you the most in practice versus being a resident?
In the first 6 months, I think the thing that surprised me most was how hard it was to push the submit button and like finalize the plan. And I, and so what I found was the best technique for me was that I would get ready as if I was going to push the submit button, sleep on the plan, open it up the next day, review it, tweak it, which I inevitably always did, and then push the submit button. And I just don't think until you've done that a few times, you know, the first 6 months. And then I think the second thing that surprised me is you fill that very first year with so much ramp up in knowledge of just the organization and how the organization works and where the pinch points are in workflows. And then you kind of find your efficiencies and you, unfortunately, there's always going to be things that irk you and you have to pick like one or two of those things and try to fix them. and then let all the other ones go.
Yeah, very sound advice.
I don't know if that's so much of a surprise as there's some pieces of a resident where you like feel like you don't have control. And I think maybe it surprised me that you do have a little control.
Yes, but not over everything. I think that's an important point.
But not over everything. Yeah. Yes. And if you, at least in an, you know, kind of in a bigger organization, you know, it's mm-hmm. like many changes that you want to see, mm-hmm. even if they're really great ones, sometimes feel like you're pushing that boulder uphill. But it's worth it. You do get to the top, but you just can't push all the boulders.
Yes, I think too, like figuring out how to manage your time and your efforts, mm-hmm. And how to make those the most productive is something that I don't think I knew how much of it I would have to do, and how, if you know, you have a like a short-term set of goals and a long-term set of goals, then ticking off some of the short-term ones with an eye on what you're going to be doing in a couple of years is a nice way to pace yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Neat. Awesome. What's your favorite thing about ACRO?
Ooh, my favorite thing about ACRO is the collegial kind of group that like just automatically kind of forms. It's, you know, you kind of come to the meeting and you're immediately put in positions where you can talk to people from different places. And then it's very easy and unintimidating to be in positions where you can actually steer activities at the annual meeting or steer educational opportunities. It has been really cool to see new practitioners with ideas. And then you are 6 months later, you know, seeing those ideas in action, podcasts, the Twitter feeds.
It's really neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. There's been like a tremendous amount of opportunities, which at an early stage in career, I don't feel like in any other organization would have been afforded to me. You know, it's been kind of humbling in a way, because I wouldn't have expected that anybody would care what I thought in the way that I felt supported here.
No, I totally agree. And it was very almost too easy to get involved, and I'm like, oh, I just want to do this and this and this and this and this.
Like, oh, that would be neat. They're like, okay, do it.
Yeah, all okay, right? We'll just do it. They're like, okay, all right, then all maybe right. I will.
It's pretty neat. If you were not a radiation oncologist, what would you do
with my life?
Yeah.
Oh. This one is hard. This one is hard. You know, to be completely honest, if I wasn't a radiation oncologist, if you'd asked me 10 years ago, because my oldest son's about to turn 10, if you'd asked me 10 years ago what I would have done if I wasn't going to be a radiation oncologist, I'm pretty sure I would have been a psychiatrist, because that was, full disclosure, that was my backup if I didn't get into radiation oncology. I even did a couple interviews. But now, if I wasn't a radiation oncologist, to be completely honest, I think I'd be a stay-at-home mom.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, it's hard to, I know, like, not, probably not everybody feels this way, but it's hard for me to picture doing anything else, you know?
Like, yes. Ugh. And in a half joking, half serious way, and you know, people are like, well, what if we cure cancer and you don't need to be a radiation oncologist anymore? Every once in a while, a patient asks that. And I'm like, well, I'm kind of qualified to do nothing. So maybe I'll, you know, work in a fast food chain, be a barista at Starbucks.
Yeah. I could drink a lot of coffee, I think. Well, awesome. Thank you so much for joining us for this podcast. Any other parting words or nuggets of wisdom you want to pass along to our audience?
Oh, the last parting words I would share is please come join Adriana and Shefali and future new practitioners in the new practitioner committee, or look into AACRO. If that's not your personal passion, there's lots of other opportunities from the government relations, accreditation, finances, all kinds of things that I never knew kind of radiation oncologists could be passionate about.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Thank you again.
Oh yeah. Thank you so much for having me on.